Welcome back. This is Disputed, a Norton Rose Fulbright podcast. I'm Ted Brook, and today we're talking about tariffs and trade disputes. As regular listeners will know, I'm normally joined by my co-host and Ottawa-based partner, Aaron Brown. But today, Aaron is switching roles and is actually going to be playing the guest. So I'm excited to say that together with Martin Maas, a senior partner also in our Ottawa office, Aaron is going to be answering my questions about tariffs, trade law, and the types of commercial and regulatory disputes that can arise when decades of continental free trade are, I guess, abruptly replaced with trade war. So Martin and Aaron, welcome.
Thanks, Ted. It's weird to be on this side of the proverbial table, but thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ted.
Yeah, good to have you both. And so, yeah, I mean, many listeners will know Aaron as a podcaster, but what they probably don't know or may not know is that in her day job, she's a litigation and regulatory lawyer with a focus on international trade, public procurement, and competition law. So Aaron regularly advises clients these types of issues, including economic sanctions, export controls, customs issues. And all of those things make her a very popular person within our firm these days. Martin may be less familiar to our listeners, but he's no less important. He's a senior partner at the firm, so maybe the title tells you something. But I mean, simply put, Martin is generally recognized as a Canadian leader in the field of international trade matters, and he's represented and advised clients in all types of situations like this, including anti-dumping, subsidy matters, treaty compliance. He counsels clients on export controls, economic sanctions, and customs. So all of the stuff that goes into trade law. I think I have the right people here to answer my burning questions about the tariffs, the uncertainty, and the disputes that relate to them. So let's start with some background. Unless they've been living under a rock, our listeners know that earlier this month, on March 4th, the United States proceeded with imposing tariffs on Canadian origin imports that were originally announced earlier in the year. Canada has retaliated. We're recording this episode on March 6th, so the situation is fluid and there's new news every day, but I still think there's a lot that we can chat about. So maybe Aaron, starting with you, what tariffs exactly were imposed by the U.S. on Canada earlier this month, and how has Canada retaliated?
Yeah, so the United States imposed the measures more or less that they had announced early in February, which are comprised of a 25% tariff on Canadian origin goods. And there's a note there for us to really talk about what that means, because I think that's a lot of source of confusion in the tariffs. But 25% tariff on Canadian origin goods, and then a lower tariff of 10% on energy resources. So that's the lay of the land in terms of what came into force on March 4th in terms of U.S. tariffs on Canadian origin goods. Canada retaliated as it had said it would do in February, and it's doing so in two phases. So the first phase has already entered into effect, and that is retaliatory tariffs of 25% on $30 billion worth of U.S. goods. And there's a specific list that Canada has published of what those goods are. And then as well, there is going to be a second phase, or at this point, it's contemplated that there would be a second phase of 25% duties on an additional $125 billion worth of U.S. goods. And there's a notice of intent that the government of Canada published earlier this week, providing a list of products that it's sort of contemplating for those tariffs and has opened that for consultation with Canadian businesses, open until March 25th. And then we'll likely see that second round of tariffs come into effect.
Okay, great. Yeah, and that's something I want to talk to you both about, the sort of list, how it gets made and what's on it and what's not on it. But before we even get there, Martin, this is going to sound simplistic, but what are tariffs exactly? Everyone is talking about them. How do they actually work from a legal perspective in Canada and the U.S.?
Well, sure, I'd be happy to discuss that, but maybe just, I think it might be important to note that just in terms of what is now in effect by Canada and what might be in terms of countermeasures, and as you mentioned, this is a fluid situation, but I think it's important to note that that there is going to be some form of tariff on goods from Canada going to the US, one that is sort of flying under the radar. It was announced a while ago, but it's taking effect on March 12th, is there will be tariffs on steel and aluminum products. Now, that's a global tariff, but what's happening is that as of March 12th, a bunch of countries that were exempted from a U.S. global tariff on aluminum and steel are now going to be subject to those, and that includes Canada. So what tariffs are, they're a rate of duty. They're basically a customs duty that's applied. And so currently between Canada and the U.S., historically, back when I was in high school, there were customs duties applicable on goods from Canada to the U.S., and they varied. Some would be 6%, 12%. And then we entered into a free trade agreement. And as a result, goods have been flowing across the borders basically duty-free with some exceptions.
And so, Martin, like every time I ship a container of washing machines across the border, I'm paying duties, or my customer's paying duties. Is that the idea? When you were in high school, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, back in high school.
You want to tell us how long ago that was? But
I remember that I did a paper on the U.S. Free Trade Agreement, the pros and cons in high school. So I know it came up, and it was Brian Mulroney was prime minister.
Did that set the whole course of your career, Martin? That one paper. Little did you know you would be a senior trade law partner in the
Well, it's interesting because back in the day, that it was controversial. I mean, we've lived with free trade, and you both grown up with free trade, but that was not the status quo. The status quo is that we had tariffs in place, and those were designed to protect our domestic industry from bad U.S. imports. And there was a lot of trepidation to going to a free trade regime back at that time. But now, now we've had free trade with some exceptions with the U.S. So the what that means is the rate of duty has been zero. 0% on those goods.
For most goods, there are, as
for
Martin
most
said
goods, for with some exceptions. But now what we're talking about is having a tariff applied, or a tariff rate applied, of 25% on all products, basically with some exceptions, coming to the U.S. So it's a percentage that's applied. And the way that it's applied is that there is a harmonized system to classify goods. And goods have a certain, they're organized in chapters, and then they're sub-organized in sub-chapters. And as a result of those, you go into this list. There's this list, and there are several chapters, up to 99 chapters. And you look in that list, and then you see the rate of duty that's applied, the percentage rate of duty. Sometimes it's not a percentage, but by and large, it's a percentage. And right now, what they've done is said, they've said for all of these chapters, all of these products that are listed, or these categories of products, we're going to apply 25% rate. That's what was announced yesterday. So a tariff is a rate that is applied on goods. But what's important to notice is to know is that the harmonized system is all of the items that are listed, them by and large are goods. They aren't services. So they aren't services. And there's also basically they're tangible goods. So things like kind of electricity that isn't really a tangible good.
What about like a digital subscription?
Yeah, like digital, anything that's transmitted digitally as opposed to like a CD-ROM showing my age again, or a floppy disk showing my age even more. Those are physical goods, but digital transmissions of entertainment or digital subscriptions would not be covered because they're not in that harmonized, they aren't covered by that harmonized code.
But to answer your earlier question, Ted, so you have a shipment that's going across the border. What you need to look at is what Martin said, the customs classification of the goods. So you look at that list with 99 chapters, and you have to hone down on what exactly. And sometimes it's unclear. Like I'm looking at my packet of Halls here, And I think there was a case a couple of years ago about whether certain throat lozenges are medicaments or whether they are candy. Like, so there are questions like that that we can unpack a little bit later. But what is the customs classification of the good? Not always straightforward, but you need to know that. You need to know the country of origin of the good, because the its specific rate of duty that will apply will depend on where that good is coming from, whether it's a trading partner, if it is a trading partner, whether which rate of duty specifically applies. It might be higher. Traditionally, there may be a higher rate of duty on a good from a country outside of one of our trading blocks and a lower rate of good for one of our trading partners. That's still the case. Just the US would now have a higher rate of duty on a lot of the products subject to Canada's retaliatory measures. And then the other thing you need to know is the value for duty of your goods. So what's the value of the shipment? As Martin said, most customs duty rates are a percentage of the value for goods. So those are a couple of things you need to know. And those are going to be, I think, important things. And let's come back to this. But there hasn't been maybe as many disputes around those things in an era of free trade. And I think we're probably going to see some more scrutiny from regulators.
Because the number in the harmonized system was always set at zero. So no one's going to really have to dive
into... Yeah, at least as between Canada and the US. And so, and certainly CBSA has all, who's the Canada Border Services Agency, who manages and oversees the process of imports and exports. They do conduct audits, and they will conduct audits, and they will look at customs classifications, and they'll look at value for duty, even in a situation where it could have a revenue neutral adjustment. And it's open to them to impose penalties if a classification is wrong, even if it's revenue neutral. But...
Sorry, can I pause there? Maybe this is a dumb question. During free trade, why would the CBSA have bothered caring about the value of goods if there's going to be
The entire system is based on importers self-declaring. And so they have control over that system to make sure that importers are declaring proper classifications, proper value for duty, proper origin on their goods, if there's no mistakes on their customs. So they have the ability to oversee that, and they can impose penalties if you make a mistake on that customs documentation, even if it wouldn't impact the amount of duties owing, because you have to, the entire system breaks down if importers start having incorrect information on those forms.
Martin, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, the major importance in the proper classification when there is no duty is statistical accuracy. That's sort of the underlying policy objective. A much more important policy objective will be now is to capture revenue. We traditionally didn't see a lot of custom verification disputes. Now, I think that if the retaliatory tariffs continue and the additional measures are imposed, there's more than just a statistical interest in relation to goods coming from the U.S. There will be dollars and cents. And from whatever we've seen, I think there's the implication is the money that will be gathered from the retaliatory tariffs will be used in some way, shape, or form. I don't think we know how, as a mechanism to to lessen the impact of the U.S. tariffs on Canadian goods, on Canadian industry, and provide supports to Canadians and Canadian industry. Again, TBD how that's going to be done. But certainly, I think they're looking at those dollars.
One thing that I want to be really clear about, because I think this is an area that people have misunderstood, is what constitutes a Canadian origin good and a U.S. origin good. So as we've discussed, the U.S. measures apply to goods of Canada, so Canadian origin goods, and the Canadian tariffs apply to U.S. origin goods. That does not mean that every single good that passes over the border between Canada and the U.S. will be subject to these enhanced or these 25% or whatever the quantum is, 10%, et cetera, tariffs, as between Canada and the U.S. A lot of goods are, say, imported into the U.S., warehoused in the U.S., and then shipped to Canada. So, for example, my mom, perfect example, she said, oh, I buy a lot from American like clothing brands. I'm not all of my clothes that I buy from U.S. clothing brands that are shipped from a facility in the U.S. are now going to be subject to these tariffs. And I said, well, mom, hold on there. Like, a lot of apparel is not actually manufactured in the United States or in Canada, and would therefore likely not actually be a product of Canada or a product of the U.S., likely to be a product of Vietnam, a product of China, wherever.
And who makes that determination, right? Who makes the call whether a product is of U.S. origin or if it's of Brazilian origin, if it's not entirely just being warehoused in a particular country.
So that determination initially is made, it's a self-determination models. The importer initially is responsible for declaring the origin of the goods in the customs documentation. That can be ascertained. So initially it's a self-declaration. That can be ascertained based on information provided by the exporter, and the exporter can, there's a mechanisms to certify the origin of the product. Aaron talked about goods that are just transshipped through the US in which there's no real change made to them. But in some cases, there can be some packaging or other things that are done in the US. There can be an addition, there can be some work done to the good in the US. So deciding whether or not that additional work or whatever happens in the US with relation in relation to a certain product is decided based on rules of origin that are generally established in the Canada-US Mexico trade agreement. So there are ways to determine that. If there is a dispute, though, then at the end of the day, initially, the any decision that is challenged by Canada, if it's a good coming into Canada, it would be the Canada Border Services Agency that can verify that and come to a different conclusion.
Okay. What if you disagree or it's worthwhile? You're like, I've got to take a run at this. How would you go about challenging a CBA's classification of, and talking, I guess, just about rules of origin? I don't know if it's different for product classification.
Yeah, but there's a similar process. So you tend to challenge kind of to CBSA first. Sometimes you're able to sort of have an informal process with CBSA where you say, look, I think you should change this before you make a final determination. Here's a bunch of additional information that you may not have known on if it's origin, then the manufacturing process, if it's classification, then the nature of the good, the characteristics. And then there's sort of an opportunity to have a formal appeal process within the CBSA. And then if a decision is made out of that process that you don't agree with, then you can elevate it to the Canadian International Trade Tribunal, which ultimately hears these questions. But I think there's a general principle here that's important for folks to understand, which is that you can't really circumvent these rules. You can't come up with something like, oh, I'm just going to ship it somewhere else first. The rules are set up in a way that they really deal with the substance of the question. So it's very hard to just sort of, very hard to sort of,
can't get around them. They're the rules. But I imagine that if this is a big change to the way that importers of record have been sort of dealing with things, there are going to be questions, right? Won't there be gray areas? And maybe the CBSA is going to be flooded with sort of requests for informal meetings to provide additional information.
Yeah, I think there may be a lot of questions and issues that come up for companies. And I mean, one of the things that Martin made a point when we did a webinar a couple of weeks ago on this, which I think was a fantastic point, which was that companies for a long time have wanted to make their product a product of Canada or the product of the US. So they may have done some manufacturing elsewhere, imported a product into Canada, and ensure that they did that last step of substantial transformation in Canada or the US so that they could benefit from the free trade bloc. And now companies may want to look at how they've organized their manufacturing and actually change some of that.
Wouldn't that be a big change to a lot of manufacturing sort of supply chain management? Or do you think that this sort of uncertainty, Martin, is significant to make clients rethink how they're treating their own manufacturing or shipping processes?
It's early days. I think most of the inquiries that we're getting now relate to, okay, have we been doing things appropriately up to now? And is there ways in the sort of technical way we've been approaching our tariff classification, our valuation of products? Another way is sometimes people have, because it was revenue neutral, there was 0% duty for goods going to the US or coming from the US, they may have been including installation in their invoice price and reflecting that in their value for duty. Well, mm-hmm. That's not really something that should be, well,
that's not
depending
on the
service.
Part of the good, right? That's
it's
a
not
service.
Part of the value of the good. So either on value, maybe they've been misclassifying it, and maybe the origin they weren't really paying attention to it as much as they should be, because this was all revenue neutral.
So I wanted to come back to two things. One, we have a blanket tariff from on Canadian origin imports going to the US, 25% for products, 10% for energy or certain energy products. But then in Canada, the retaliatory tariffs, it seems unclear to me which products are actually subject to it, putting aside the origin rule. So how does that sort of information get out to the business community? And then is it subject to change? Like, is the Canadian government going to be adding and removing things from this list if the trade war continues?
Yeah, so you're right to say that the US was a much more sort of blanket approach, 25% generally, and then 10% on energy resources. Canada took a little bit of a different approach, and they sort of developed a specific list. And as I mentioned before, there's two rounds of this. So in the first round, the government has already released its list of goods that are subject, and it's organized by those harmonized customs tariff numbers that we've been talking about. So if you look at the current list, there's everything from poultry and meat to cheese products. There's food preparation products, wine, self-adhesive plates, sheets, film, tape. So there's plywood products. So you really need to sort of look through that list. And then there's another list, which was published, of lists of goods for consultation for that second round of Canadian tariffs that is set to come into effect later.
If I see a good on the consultation list and I'm like, yikes.
Respond to the consultation.
What do you do? But like, how do I sort of make my voice heard? Or ultimately, is this macroeconomic issues and it's really not going to make a difference whether one particular business has complaints?
Yeah, I think it might make a difference. I mean, Martin, feel free to disagree if you want. But, you know, the government of Canada has clearly signaled that they want to take a more measured approach. They haven't done a blanket on everything. So they clearly want to do this in a way that is sensitive to industry, I think. And that doesn't harm Canadian businesses more than they need to. And I think that they will be open to those potential issues and impacts.
Yeah, and what I would say is for those, look, there's a process. If you should engage in that process, the key point will be, this is an input into something that I am making, producing, manufacturing here in Canada, or that is important to some business that I'm running into Canada. If you're just bringing it in and you're selling it into Canada and you're just a distributor, look, feel free to make those comments. But I think they're more looking at, did we inadvertently hurt Canadian domestic industry or domestic manufacturers because we've captured a potential input into something that they may make here in Canada. The other thing that they're looking at is, are these things, or are there particular industries in Canada that they're looking to create a market for in Canada? Let's be clear, this is a 25% tariff. It's not a prohibition on exports to the US, but it may be more difficult for these products to compete. So they may put tariffs on goods coming from the US because it benefits a particular Canadian industry that is going to be affected by the US tariffs. So you have to counterweigh that, and I think you would address it. But in my mind, the better types of submissions that you should be making are through industry associations. If you can get to a common position with other people in an industry association, I think that will have more legs in terms of the consultation. You may even engage in informal discussions with government officials, Global Affairs Canada, in relation to that outside of the formal process. And if you can also engage your provincial government to do that and support you in those, so much the better. So depending on where you are and how broad your issue is, I wouldn't say just put all your eggs in the consultation basket.
Yeah, and speaking of not putting all your eggs in the consultation basket, another interesting thing that exists that I think is very important for importers to know about with respect to the Canadian tariffs is that there's also a remission process. So earlier in March, I'll say, the government published a guidance document on the process for requesting remissions. So remissions are a way to allow relief from the payment of tariffs. And the government has indicated that it will consider these an exceptional and compelling circumstances. And it's identified two specific baskets of goods that it may be willing to offer remission, so relief of tariffs. One is to address a situation where goods used as inputs cannot be sourced domestically, either on a national or regional basis or reasonably from non-US sources. So that kind of goes to Martin's point of supporting manufacturing and ensuring that the Canadian manufacturing industry can source inputs and aren't overly impacted by the tariffs imposed on imports into Canada. And then the second basket is to address case by case other exceptional circumstances that could have severe adverse impacts on the Canadian economy. So
just to make the distinction between the two, the first process is don't put this on the list, right? So that's the consultation process. If it's on the list and you can say, yes, okay, this covers this whole broad range of products, but you know, this specific product, I can't source anywhere else but the US. Canada doesn't do it. The rest of the world doesn't do it, but I need it. And if you don't allow, and if I pay duty on it, it's going to cripple my business. That's what a remission order would be in relation to. So it's after the fact, you pay the duty up front until you get a remission order. And then after you go through the remission order process, you may be relieved of that duty, you'll get a refund, and then going forward, you may not pay it if it's still in effect.
This sounds like something that would have existed pre-NAFTA, but now it's sort of being dusted off for a new use. People probably haven't really turned their minds to it in the same way for many years. So I want to close by raising the issue of what companies can be doing now with their contracts and contractual clauses. I've been getting questions about this just as a litigator looking at their contracts. I know both of you have. So given the uncertainty, is there really anything that clients can be doing now when it comes to reviewing the contracts, allocating risk, or is it too late now that the trade war is underway and we're really batting down the hatches and you have to work with what you've got?
Well, I think it depends on where you are in your contract. If your contract's in place, you've got a supply contract, or you're in place, depending on whether you're the supplier or the purchaser, there probably is already some sort of allocation of risk in relation to this. It may not be clear. So in some cases, it says there's going to be a tax definition saying prices included all tax, and it looks like there's duties included in that, but depending on the wording. So the taxes may be included as that, and this may be viewed as a tax, and who is responsible for taxes may be allocated. But at the same time, this is a pretty fundamental change. Is this a change in law? Is this a force majeure? It really depends on each of the clause, the way you're structured. And there's been no case law developed on this. So I don't know that we can say categorically, oh, the tax clause dominates over the change of law. There's still some uncertainty in relation to, and it very much depends on each contract. Going forward, my view is that if you're negotiating this, tariffs, even if this went away tomorrow, I don't think we're in a world where a business can decide that tariff risks are no longer going to be a potential issue. And I think that there should be specific clauses. I mean, my advice is, like, notwithstanding change in law, notwithstanding taxes, let's have a clause that say, this is who's going to allocate, who's taking on the risk of tariffs. That depends on the business deal that you have. But depending on how you think that risk should be allocated, use precise language and address the very circumstance as you think is appropriate as between the parties, and not rely on the old standards of change of law, taxes, and those things. I mean, it's not that there was anything wrong with those contracts. To the contrary, they probably address the situation. And there's probably an answer as to who actually bears the risk in relation to that. It's just that we had free trade for 40 years. And if your supply chain was really Canada, US only, and you weren't part of these exceptional products that had duty on them, you probably didn't pay a lot of attention to that risk allocation because it was revenue neutral. It didn't matter. It wasn't a big negotiating point. And in fairness, that reflected the state of play for decades. So, but now the state of play has changed. So I think contracts should change in that regard.
Great. Well, so Aaron, any other takeaways that you would want to highlight?
Yeah, so I think we've covered most of them throughout the discussion, but a couple of takeaways are the consultations are still open. I think even when that official consultation period closed, to Martin's point, having open dialogue with government officials, there's nothing in Canada to suggest that changes can't be made to those lists. Looking at remission orders, if duties are put in place for a good that impacts your supply chain. One thing we didn't talk about as well is drawback. So Canada maintains drawback programs whereby typically manufacturers or processors can import a good and get a drawback on the tariff that was paid if the good is used as an input and then re-exported. So Canada has indicated that drawbacks are generally available, at least for the first round of tariffs. I think the situation is different in the US from what I understand, but with respect to Canadian duties, drawbacks are potentially available. So that's something to look at.
So is that kind of like a reimbursement that you would apply for after?
There's two different programs. One of them, you can actually get onto the duty relief program, which is a program with CBSA whereby you don't pay the duties up front. And there's a system where you say to CBSA, okay, I've imported these products for use in this other product, and all of the products that I've imported have been re-exported. And there's rules and there's program requirements. But if you meet those, then in some cases, you can not pay the duties up front. And then the duty drawback program, you pay them up front, and then it's a similar process, but you seek the reimbursement of them. So that's a program that Canadian importers could potentially be looking at as well to alleviate some of the burden in some situations. I think we've talked about looking at your supply chains, kind of thinking those through, looking at your origin, your customs classification, your value, making sure your ducks are in a row there, thinking about whether any changes could be made to those, if they need to be made, if the tariffs remain in effect for a long time, or if there's continued uncertainty, considering alternate sources of supply as well, and drawing on other free trade agreements. Canada has free trade agreements with a number of countries around the world, the European Union. We have the CPTPP trade agreement with a number of trading partners around the world. So drawing on those trade agreements for free trade and lower tariffs is something that should be considered as well. And then, as Martin was just talking about, looking at contractual clauses and what your template agreements say, and sort of thinking through whether there are any changes to be made there.
My final thought is it's hard to see a silver lining in this. We're in it. It's pretty intense. And companies are really impacted by this. And I am in no way negating that. It's a big cloud. But if we are going to look at a silver lining out of this, Canada has talked for years about diversifying its trading relationships and looking abroad. And we do have a number of free trade agreements in place. Our government has put, as in terms of legal frameworks, they are out there. There's a lot of logistical issues with trading with other countries. There's other business reasons why there may not have been as much uptake on those opportunities in the past. And I'm not negating those. But now there is a change in the global trade regime. And I think that even if these were to go away tomorrow, the Canadian companies, I think now, are alert to the fact that they could come back at any time, whether in this administration or three, four administrations down the road. And so there is now, I think, an urgency in looking at more trade diversification.
I think, we'd probably be remiss to have this conversation without also talking about interprovincial trade barriers. And I think that's another area that we're really going to look at, and I think has already been a topic of conversation amongst both the provincial governments and the federal government, is how to remove interprovincial trade barriers so that we can trade more effectively within Canada. And so that's another thing to be thinking about, especially at that industry association level, if there are recommendations that you can make within your industry to reduce interprovincial trade barriers so that your company can do business more effectively within Canada. I think that's going to be another area of potential silver lining as well, is that this acting as an impetus to really try to make that smoother within Canada as well.
Great. Well, thank you, Martin. Thank you, Aaron. I really appreciate this. And best of luck weathering all the calls and inquiries that I know you guys are getting out by the minute.
Ted, how are you going to debrief alone at the end? We always do our little debrief at the end.
I'm not going to do a monologue. I feel like, no, we're just going to do a cold exit. We're going to play some fun music. Yeah, that's my plan.
All right. Well, you better do your like and subscribe outro then.
Everybody like and subscribe. And if you do have questions about this topic, if you have any ideas for future episodes, the one thing I will plug is that we are looking to get law students involved in an upcoming episode. Canadian law students across the country, if you have an idea for a disputed episode, if you're interested in becoming a legal podcaster, write to us, reach out to us, because we... And keep your eyes peeled, because we're going to have some more details about an initiative we'll be launching later this year. So thanks so much.